be honest with you, you're going to have to wait till the end of the sermon to figure out what... Hey, can you turn me down just a little bit, Matt? You're going to have to wait till the end of the sermon to figure out what that clip has to do with today's topic. Right now, I want to take you on a camping trip as we continue to discuss this riding the ships idea. See, there was a campground slash wilderness trail resort in Colorado that was suffering because of the economy. So they decided that they needed to get a better understanding of what was wrong with them and why they couldn't seem to get repeat businesses. So they sent out some surveys to people that had come to the wilderness retreat and done a hike with them. And these are the results they got back. I'd like to share them with you. One customer says, the trail needs to be reconstructed. Please avoid building trails that go uphill. Another customer wrote, too many bugs and leeches and spiders and spider webs. Please spray the trails to get rid of these areas, to get rid of these pests from the areas. Third customer wrote, please pave the trails. Chairlifts need to be added in some places so we can get to the wonderful views without having to hike to them. Another wrote, the coyotes made too much noise last night and kept me awake. Please get rid of these annoying animals. A small deer came into my camp and stole my jar of pickles. Is there any way I can get reimbursed? Escalators would be helpful on the steep uphill reclines. A McDonald's would be nice at the trailhead. And by the way, just so you know, there are too many rocks in the mountains. Now, these people went and took this adventure, but I don't think they quite understood what it meant to go to a wilderness trail resort. After all, they wanted some changes made to make it a little more easier and comfortable. Now, that brings us to what we've been talking about. We've been talking about righting the ship. And the ship that we are trying to right is our relationship with Christ. And, well, we talked about several things already that we have to fix if we're going to right our relationship. First, we have to start working on lordship, the idea of Jesus is Lord of my life. We have to work on leadership, making Jesus the leader of my life. And then last week we talked about worship, in other words, how to make Jesus a focal point of my life. And today we're going to talk about another one of those ship words that we are very familiar with. It's a very churchy word. Discipleship. We hear that word and we all get little visions of what it means to be a disciple of Christ. We get pictures of men sitting around campfires and, you know, they would do miracles, and we all have ideas of what disciple means. But we need to know that making disciples, well, it's our number one calling in the church. This is the Great Commission, as we now call it. Matthew 28, verses 18 through 19. Then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. So we get this word disciple, and Jesus tells us to make a disciple, to have discipleship, well, there's two main ingredients. There's God's power, mentioned in that verse, because it says you have to go in the power of the Spirit. And then there's people. Go into all the nations. And I guess that's true. If you don't have God going with you and you don't have people, you can't make a disciple. You can't have discipleship. And that verse also tells us, not only is there two main ingredients, He really only gives us two things to do, right? He says we're supposed to go into all the nations, and He says we're supposed to baptize them, and we're supposed to teach them things about Jesus. That's how you make a disciple, right? You take a person and you go out and you reach them and you tell them about Jesus and you help them to understand what it means to follow Jesus, and then they're baptized, and then you spend the rest of their life teaching them all the rules and regulations and the do's and don'ts. And I have to ask you, is that really it? Is that really all that there is to making a disciple? And I guess in a way we can say that's all there is, but when we boil it down to just this one little verse, we get ourselves in trouble when it comes to the word discipleship. Because unfortunately what it does is it teaches us religion and not relationship.
It really does.
I can just go out and meet the base requirements, and I can just go out and teach the rules and regulations, and I can just get you to adhere to the rules and regulations. Well, then you're a disciple. The funny thing is this focuses on the destination and not the journey. It really does. It focuses on the idea of, well, we want to get people to heaven. Isn't that what we preach? We want to tell people how they can have eternal life, how they get to heaven. And Jesus really isn't all that interested in heaven. He's more interested in, well, the relationship. He's more interested in the journey. I like this verse in Matthew, and I understand why we call it the Great Commission, and it's a very valuable verse to us. But you need to know this is the starting place of discipleship, not the ending place. This is not all the church was called to do. So this morning, I want you, if you have your copy of God's Word, I want you to turn over to Luke chapter 14. We're going to read verses 25 through 33. And then we are going to take a hard look at what is it that really Jesus meant when He says, I want you to be disciples. What is it that Jesus meant when He said, we want discipleship in the church? This is what the verses read. Luke chapter 14, verses 25 through 33. Large crowds were traveling with Jesus. And turning to them, He said, if anyone comes to Me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brother and sister, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be My disciple. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow Me cannot be My disciple. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, this person began to build and wasn't able to finish. Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? And if he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be My disciple. And we read these verses and all of a sudden the mood to discipleship changes. And I want you to know what's going on here. See, we're about two-thirds of the way through Jesus' ministry when He makes these statements. We're walking along and there's a very large crowd following, because popularity for Jesus' ministry at this time, well, it's at an all-time high. Man, they're packing out the shores of Galilee. People are all over the place. He's the talk of the town. He's making all the headlines. He's the buzzword in Jerusalem. Have you seen Jesus? And the crowds are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And you know what? The apostles are probably getting excited. I got a feeling even Judas was happy because the coffers were full. The offering plates were overrunning. People were really into this Jesus thing. They were excited. They had hitched their trailer to the winning horse. But the funny thing is, Jesus, not so much. He turned around and saw this crowd and, well, He wasn't that impressed. He really wasn't. The numbers didn't do it for Him. He wanted something more. And so then we get to what He does. And I'm sure the disciples, their jaw had to open up a little bit when Jesus did this. Because here they are, they're going down the trail. He's been stopping and teaching and stopping and teaching, and the crowd gets bigger. And all of a sudden He stops. He says, let Me tell you something. Unless you hate your father and mother, well, you can't be My disciple. Now, I have to ask you something. Don't you think that's a tough verse? I mean, that's a really, really tough verse to hear somebody say. Unless you hate your father and mother, your brother and sister, your father and your children, unless it's all of that, well, you really can't be My disciple. Well, we need to understand exactly what it is that Jesus is saying here. It's not really all about hating father and mother. You see, Jesus has a point. That word hate in the Jewish terminology didn't mean the way we think of hate. You see, when I think of hate, it means that I totally don't like you. I don't want to be anywhere around you. The word hate in the Jewish Jewish language, well, it meant that you had less love. It means that you could not love them as much as. less love. It's not that you had to disown your parents. It's not you had to disown your family. But they had to take a less priority than Jesus. As the screen says, it must be the most important relationship to you. That's hard. I mean, I have a wife and I have two kids and I have a mom and dad that are getting up in age and I have a lot of responsibility on me. And here is Jesus telling me I have to, if I want to be his disciple, I have to get some perspective. And all of those other relationships, they have to take a back seat at some point. As a matter of fact, it has to take a back seat to my life itself. That's the back seat that Jesus says that you have to understand this relationship, this discipleship idea. If you want to be a disciple of Christ, it says that, you know what? It has to be more important than what sustains your life. It has to be more important than your job. That means if I have to make a choice between following Jesus and the job that I have, guess which one has to go? I have to find a new job. It says that it has to be more important than things that maintain my life. You know the things, my house and my car and my hobbies and my NCAA bracket. Jesus has to be more important than all of those things too. And you know what? If I run into a conflict where this is taken away from Christ, then you know what has to go? The things. My hobbies, my entertainment. See, Jesus is drawing a very stark line here to say, you know what? You want to be my disciple? I'm not impressed with the crowd. I'm not impressed with people that just want to follow me from place to place and just want me to put on a good show for them, just want me to entertain them. That doesn't impress me. You see, if you really want to be a disciple, you have to carry a cross. Now, in our society, the cross is kind of taken on a different kind of view because we've kind of sanitized it. We kind of make them look really, really, really nice. As a matter of fact, ladies, I'm betting somewhere in your jewelry boxes you have some kind of jewelry that is that of a cross. Maybe it's a pendant or some earrings. Or maybe it's a cross that goes on to a necklace. And it's probably made of, it's really shiny and it might be gold or it might be silver plated or it's something that looks nice. And so we talk about this idea of carrying a cross and we kind of sanitize it. Even our cross up here that we keep on the stage to remind ourselves of the cross, it's been sanitized. It's kind of, it's rough, but it looks kind of like clean. But you need to understand that a cross was really what Jesus was saying here. He wasn't talking about the woe is me thing. He wasn't talking about a sanitized cross. The Jews knew what this meant. See, the Jews grew up under Roman authority and they knew that, well, a cross, well, it was a symbol of death. As a matter of fact, the cross was the most excruciating, humiliating way that anybody could be executed. So when Jesus looks at him and says, I need you to carry your cross, they got the understanding. They got the picture. Because they knew this was a symbol of sacrifice. They knew it. People that were sentenced to go onto a cross, they were going to be sacrificed right there in front of the audience. They were going to be put on spectacle for amusement. We always see the picture of Jesus, and he's there on the cross. And they always had the little loincloth, and I understand why they do that, but you need to understand that's probably not the way it looked. The cross was made to be humiliating. You were being sacrificed for the crimes that you had committed. You were being put on as made a spectacle. They usually crucify people in the nude. Completely defenseless. You were there just put out there for all the world to see. And here is Jesus saying, you know what? You want to follow me? That's what I want. You have to understand this cross was not comfortable. They didn't pad them. They didn't make them kind of nice and smooth. As a matter of fact, they made the cross by they just went out and they chopped down a tree and they dug the hole and they put the cross, the post going this way in it. They left bark and splinters and knots and everything else in it. It was not supposed to be a comfortable trip. Because the cross was there because the Romans had said, you had done something against our government and we are going to execute you. When Jesus said this, I got a feeling even a few of the 12 were like, now wait a minute here, Jesus. You're messing things up for us. I mean, here we've got the crowd and things are going good, and you know, a crowd can turn into an army. An army could be used to overthrow the Roman government. Things could be going well. We could each be a little governor of our own little section of Israel, and all could be well. And what are you doing, Jesus? What do you mean that you cannot be a disciple? Isn't that what he says? Jesus kind of makes things cut and dry here. He's emphatic. I'm glad he wrote it this way, because I would hate to be the one to have to make this statement. But Jesus was very clear. If this is not your perspective of discipleship, if the idea is not that you're going to give it all, if the idea is not that you're going to give it up, if the idea is not that you're going to follow Jesus wholeheartedly, then Jesus said, you know what? Start questioning whether or not you're really a disciple. Not my words. His words. If there are things that are getting in the way of you following Christ wholeheartedly, then Jesus says, start questioning whether you're following at all. I don't think this was probably popular. I got a feeling some of the Jews that were sitting there and some of the people that had been following in the crowd thinned out a little bit. There are probably some people that followed, but they said, you know what, this man's crazy. He's a nut job. Hate my family? Turn my back on my family? Don't make my family the priority? Remember, family was a big deal in the Jewish culture. What? You want me to give up everything? The good news is Jesus didn't leave them hanging. He wanted to make sure he drove the point home. So he sat down and he gave them a couple of really, really, really great object lessons. He starts off with this idea of building a house. Now, a few years ago, or I guess, actually I say a few years ago, but it's been almost 15, 16 years ago, we built a house at Lake Monticello, and by the time that project was done, we swore we'd never build another one. Because you see, when the real estate agent took us out there and we looked at the little piece of property and we looked at the contractor that said he was going to build the house, and this was supposed to be a simple process, right? You know, you pick a piece of property, you say, I want one of them, I put that there, and it's all supposed to be over. But as the months wore on and they were building this house, it became a rather time-consuming project. I would get questions and emails about, well, what color do you want the carpet? I don't know. I want carpet. What color do you want the cabinets? Well, I don't know. I want cabinets. What kind of appliances do you want? I took one of my friends out there when they still had just the shell, and we were walking through, and he's walking through, and he begins making other suggestions. I'm like, wait a minute. I just want a house. And Jesus is saying, you know what? Think of your discipleship kind of like building a house. Imagine if we had started building that house and we had went and we had talked to the contractor, and the contractor said, you know what? It's going to cost you $50,000 to build this house. And suppose I looked at my wife and we thought about it and said, you know what? Well, we've got $5,000 in the bank. That'll get us started. So I tell you what, you go ahead and start the house, and we'll worry about the other $45,000 as we go. How's that going to end up? Not well. As a matter of fact, today the banks wouldn't let you do that. The government, with any contractor worth their salt, isn't going to work that way. What do they want? They want to know that you have all the funds up front that you're going to be able to complete the project. That's the analogy Jesus is making. Before you take that term disciple and you put it around your neck and you put it across your chest, you say, I am a disciple of Christ. Jesus said, I want you to sit down and I want you to think about what this is going to cost you. Because while it is a gift of God, you know it's going to cost you something. The gift itself is totally free, but to put the gift in your life, it's going to cost you something. It means that you're going to have to sit down and think about, well, you know what, if I do this, I may not have some family members that are so happy with me, and they may not talk to him anymore. It may mean that I have to switch my job. I may have to change my lifestyle. Things are going to have to change. And Jesus is telling them, look, before you stay in this crowd and you keep following, you need to know this is going to cost you something. And don't be foolish. If you're not interested in the cost, maybe you better think about whether or not you really want to call yourself a disciple. To drive his point home, he gives another approach to it. Something that all of the people of that day would have understood. Suppose there's a king, and the king has this other kingdom that's going to be invading, and the king looks out there and they have about 20,000 men. Before you go and you decide to make war with these people, Jesus says, wouldn't it be a good idea to sit down and count your troops? And when you count your troops and you only have 10,000 and he has 20,000, he says, you know what? A smart king, instead of trying to go to war, would make peace. And here's the analogy again. He's saying the same thing. You know what? When you look out across your life and you look out and you say, I want to be a disciple of Christ. I want to follow discipleship. I want to have Jesus in my life. He said, you know what? You better look way down the road. Don't just look at the here and now. You better look way down the road, because you understand, as we go through this, you better make sure you have the resources to go all the way. This is a troubling verse. I struggle with this verse because you know what? I know how I want discipleship to work. Here's how discipleship is supposed to work. I'm here in the church one day and preacher preaches a sermon and it convicts my heart, and I come forward and you baptize me, and after you baptize me, I start coming to Sunday school, and then maybe I become really regular at church, and you know what? I do really good. I read my Bible on somewhat of a regular basis, and we start saying prayers at meals and before we go to bed at night, and I'm a disciple. But what about the other parts of my life? You see, we want to compartmentalize everything. And when Jesus talks about being a disciple, he means something completely different than what we think. We want to just stick with the baptize and learn the rules. And Jesus said, okay, baptize, learn the rules, that's the beginning. But understand, this is a process that's going to take the rest of your life. And while the gift is free, it's going to make some changes in your life that will cost you something as you move forward. See, we kind of water it down. It says, in the same way, those of you who do not give up everything cannot be my disciples. We want this cheap, don't we? We're bargain shoppers. We want discipleship to cost me as little as possible. We want it to cost the least amount of time, the least amount of my resources. That's discipleship. We want it convenient. We want time slots that make it easy for me. We don't want church to be too late, and we don't want it to be too early. We don't want Jesus to ask him to do something that's going to be too hard. We want this all convenient. But you know, that's not discipleship. At least, not as Jesus described it to this crowd. Jesus says discipleship is going to change everything in your life. So now I want to come back around and tie in the little clip. See, I'm going to do this. I'm going to stay up here today because I've noticed when I start coming down here, everybody starts zipping up their Bibles and they start packing things. He's almost done. It's almost time to go home. So just stick with me for a minute. Don't start doing that, because I want to bring in the clip. Captain Forrest Gump. You chuckle at even hearing the name if you've seen the movie, because you know this man is anything but a captain. Okay, as a matter of fact, in the very front of the movie, they called him the village idiot. He was just a man that wasn't wrapped real tight. And here he is, and now he is a shrimp boat captain. You know the funny thing is, at the point when we see that clip, you know what he hasn't done at this point? Caught any shrimp. He went out and he made an investment. He bought a boat. Okay? And he bought some nets. And he bought some fuel. And he did all of this because his very best friend in the whole wide world that died on the shores of Vietnam, Bubba, had convinced Forrest Gump that, you know what? Shrimp boating is the life that there is to be expected. It's everything. If you just get your boat and you get out there and you're catching the shrimp, everything you have will be great. And so Forrest Gump has decided to honor his dead friend's memory by becoming a shrimp boat captain. But he doesn't really understand what it takes to be a captain of a boat. Okay, don't start packing up. I'm coming down, but don't start packing up. He doesn't understand what it takes to be a captain of a boat. As a matter of fact, when he sees his friend, Lieutenant Dan, on the shore, what's he forget about? The boat. He jumps in the water, he swims to shore, and the first thing you know, that's my boat as it goes crashing up on the shore. And you know what? I think a lot of times that's us.
That's us in our Christian discipleship. We hear the story of Jesus and it moves us. Man, it does. You can't really understand what Jesus did on the cross that doesn't do something to your life. It moves us. And so you know what? For a little while, we take our resources and we put it all into Jesus, just like he did that shrimp boat. But then when the next thing comes along the shore, we want to jump off and go say hi to that, and we forget all about the boat that we signed up to captain. We forget all about that. And it's kind of funny as the story goes, you know, Lieutenant Dan becomes the first mate and they get out there and they still can't catch any shrimp. And then Lieutenant Dan asked Forrest Gump where the shrimp were. He said, I don't know, maybe we should pray to God. So they start going to church to fix their problems. Well, okay, Forrest goes to church. Lieutenant Dan kind of sits in the back. But as they tell the story in the movie, there was this night. This huge storm came up and it rocked the boat, and they were so scared that everything was going to go over. But Lieutenant Dan was up there yelling at God and screaming at God, and Forrest Gump was just praying that, just please let me make it through the storm. And when the storm was all done, all the rest of the shrimp boats had been taken care of, put out of commission, and there was Forrest and his boat, and they were the only ones left. And all of a sudden, shrimping was easy at that point, and Bubba Gump shrimp is what they got. You know the movie lines. My wife's like, yeah, I've watched that about 100 times. Every time it comes on the TV, I have to stop and watch a few minutes of it. It's required. But here's the point. Forrest kind of got lucky, because he did not take into consideration all the cost it would have taken to be a shrimp boat captain. He didn't. He only took in the cost it took to buy gas, nets, and boat. To be a really good shrimp boat captain, it took commitment from his life. He had to live on the boat. He had to captain the boat. He had to clean the nets. He had to put the nets down. He had to pull the shrimp up. And when they actually started catching shrimp, you know, when they didn't have a big staff to take care of, they had to clean them little things. Shrimps are nasty creatures. Okay, they had to clean them little things. They had to get it ready to go to market. It wasn't an easy job. I think a lot of us, our discipleship runs aground because we approach Christianity like Forrest approached shrimp boating. We just make the initial investment. And then as we're going down the life and Jesus stops and says, you know, what about this? What about that? Are you willing to give up this for me? Are you willing to put me as a priority over your family? And we look at Jesus and go, that isn't what I signed up for. All I wanted was a boat that went on the little shore so I could say I'm a shrimp boat captain. So let me encourage you today. We're going to head into a time of decision. I realize you want to pack up, so you can start now if you really have to. We're going to head into a time of decision. I want you to start considering, what have you really put into this relationship that you have with Jesus? Are you really following Jesus' model of discipleship? Are you really putting him as a priority in your life? Is he more important than your family? Is he more important than your job? Is he even more important than your hobbies? Or is Jesus just somewhere in the line waiting to get up to the front? Because Jesus makes it very plain in Luke. If he's not already at the front, then start questioning whether or not you really are a disciple. And that's hard. I know it is. But let me encourage you during this time of invitation to start taking stock of your lives. Maybe you're going to have to jettison a few things from your life in order to get your ship turned correctly. Maybe the reason you're struggling is because you just have too much. Maybe you're going to have to look at some relationships long and hard and say, you know what, these are the ones pulling me away, not pulling me toward. Whatever it is, this is your time. If you need to come forward and you need somebody to pray with you, I'm always here. If you've never accepted Christ and you want to understand what it means, who is this guy that tells people to turn their back and follow him, come forward. We'll turn scripture and I'll tell you all about it. Decision time is your time to figure out, what is it that you want to do with the life he gave you? Discipleship. It isn't about just coming and doing. It's about giving your entire life to following Christ. Would you please stand and we're going to pray.